Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, August 23rd, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page, X, and Instagram at FranStorchND. X used to be Twitter, you know. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So I'm continuing on my journey of disc stuff, and I was doing pretty good and, you know, getting some swimming in, getting some walks in, doing a lot of stretching. And I went to physical therapy last week and it was very interesting. I saw Olga, and Olga's focus is more on myofascial release and core strengthening and stuff like that. So she gave me exercises to do, which were really nice. So there were some hip stretches that I did. I was to stand on one foot when possible, which I didn't do as much as I probably should, but the hip stretches, she had me doing them seated, but I generally do recline pigeon, which is basically the same thing, and I'm very comfortable doing that, so I did a lot of that. I also found that my back seems to be loosening up. I mean, Olga did a lot of work on me. She did myofascial release, and she did ultrasound on my leg, which I found helpful, and so I felt a lot looser, and then I asked Olga if I could try to ride my bike. And she said, okay, but you don't want to go long. And your rule is that if it hurts, don't do it. And so, doctor, when I do that, it hurts. So don't do that. That was her advice to me. She said, I'm not going to tell you what to do and not to do, but I do advise you, if something hurts, don't do it. I said, I would like to try to ride my bike. She said, okay, go 5 miles and no more. And I'm being generous. So I followed her instructions on, so I had seen her a week ago today, Monday the 14th, and so I went for a bike ride on the 16th. The thing is, that morning, I had a hard time getting out of bed. I wasn't feeling great. It was a hard time to get myself going, but I finally did. Ron was in the throes of setting up the steeplechase, and by the way, here I am with my steeplechase shirt. I'm very proud. It's orange this year. It's very nice, very, very cheery, sherbety orange color. It's very cute. Mm. I finally got myself going, and Ron had fixed up my bike, and I hadn't ridden my bike in a month, and I got on the bike, and I did 5 miles. I felt like, when I was on the bike, it felt wonderful. It felt so beautiful and freeing and all the things that I love about riding the bike, even though I felt weakness in my left leg. I had no back pain from it. I was so excited. While I was on the bike, I did not have back pain. I didn't have extreme back pain. I had a slight aggravation of nerve pain later that day, but it wasn't bad. But as the day went on, I started to not feel well. And by the time it got to the evening, I wasn't able to finish my supper. And so my appetite had gone down. And then the next day, I went to work and I was only able to see 4 patients. I had a schedule of like 8 patients and I was only able to see 4 of them because I started back with dysautonomia symptoms. And so because a couple days earlier, I'd had some neck pain and I had the shaking and I had some other symptoms, I decided that maybe I had Lyme disease. So I contacted my PCP and I actually got antibiotics, and I'm taking a course of antibiotics right now, as well as probiotics, of course. And then I'm taking some herbs, some various herbs to help with the possible Lyme disease. And I got blood work on Friday just to double check. And the thing is, if you're already symptomatic, you don't want to wait. If you think it might be Lyme disease, if you can get somebody to prescribe for you or you can start treating immediately, it's a good idea to do that. So that's why I chose to do that, even if I don't have it. So I did a few days of antibiotics and then I'll just do major probiotics and I'll correct that. I also stopped eating sugar pretty much completely. And so then I struggled for a number of days with dysautonomia. So I wasn't able to work half a day Thursday nor all day Friday. And because of, you know, the orthostatic, my symptoms are orthostatic intolerance, meaning I don't feel good standing up. I don't technically have POTS because my heart doesn't race, but I don't feel good standing up. And I feel better sitting and even better lying down. And then I also had these intermittent tremors, which is among my symptoms, and then I had reduced appetite. And these symptoms have been coming and going. Today, since diagnosing myself and starting the antibiotics, today is the day that I have felt the best so far. I've had very, very minimum of shaking. I have teeny tiny head tremors last night, but nothing like I had the last few days. So I'm definitely better today, and I hope that my feeling better it goes on long enough so that I can work tomorrow, because I don't want to be out of work. It's not 100% clear that it's Lyme disease, although taking the antibiotics and treating for Lyme, I'm getting better. But could it have been just a kick up of my dysautonomia that I've been having for a while, just from having a lot of pain and, you know, trying to hold it together while seeing a lot of patients? And while being in pain, that my body's just like, no, you can't do this. It's hard to say, because I kind of got myself out of it for the moment anyway. But I'm going to continue to treat for Lyme disease until I have a really good reason not to, or until I'm like, yep, it's Lyme disease. I'm just going to keep treating until I'm sure I'm well. So that's where I'm at now. I did go for a short walk yesterday. I felt that with dysautonomia, the thing is you don't want to do anything. You're scared to do anything because you're afraid to stand up. But the thing is, that's not really the best thing to do. If you stay prone all the time, it's a lot harder to get up. It's actually better to get a bit of exercise. And if you read all the stuff on dysautonomia, it says that, you know, getting regular exercise is important. So I tried to, you know, took breaks and got up and down. And on Saturday was the Steeplechase Bike Tour, which I couldn't do. And it's the first time I haven't done the Steeplechase Bike Tour since 2004. It made me very sad. But I did, it took me a long time to get out of bed. And I went over to the Holy Cow Family Shelter and said hello to everybody. And I drove a friend back to the start of the Steeplechase. And so I got to see some people. And then went home and rested. And then yesterday I did some more resting. And I'm also doing, so I did that walk yesterday. And then I've been doing just regular activities around the house that I have to do, like prepare my lunch for the week and vacuum, do laundry with breaks in between. And I've been able to tolerate that. So it hasn't been wonderful. I mean, if it's not one thing, it's another. It's been a little bit hard. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's just, yeah. So anyway, I'm still working on it. I'll keep you posted. Today, I'm scheduled for another physical therapy appointment with Olga, so I'll see how that goes. I intend to go, and I'm going to tell her to be gentle on me, because it's possible that the other thing is that she did myofascial release on me, and myofascial release causes some resetting of your fascia and stuff. So I'm not sure if that could have triggered anything. So anyway, so there's a few thoughts about what's actually going on, but I am treating like I have Lyme disease. And dysautonomia comes and goes, and so do Lyme symptoms. So it's really hard to say exactly what's going on. It'll be helpful to get the blood work back. And I did the blood work on Friday. It's not back yet, so I'll find out. This is aging is not for the faint.
It's a professional sport.
It really is.
Mm, yeah. That's what I call it.
It's true. Anyway, so that's what I'm doing these days. So let's talk about, we're on a theme of inflammation. So let's talk about some supplements that help with inflammation. All right. So here are some supplements that fight inflammation. Of course, you've heard me talk endlessly about curcumin. Curcumin is definitely something that can be very helpful. I'm taking it myself right now. And curcumin, as we've talked about, if you take plain turmeric, like if you eat turmeric in your food, it's not well absorbed. So it's a great spice to put in your food if you want to reduce inflammation in your digestive system. If you pair that turmeric with black pepper, you will probably get more absorption of it. And that's why in Indian cuisines and in cuisines where they consume curry, it's usually mixed with some black pepper. And they know to do that. So it gives it a nice spice, but it also helps with absorption in the rest of your body, in your systemic absorption. And so curcumin, is the extract of turmeric. Turmeric is the plant. It's a little rhizome. It's a little root that looks a lot like ginger. They're in fact in the same family. They look very similar, except turmeric roots are thinner and smaller. And if you cut them open, they're extremely bright yellow. Whereas ginger, if you cut it open, it's sort of a light tan. And they're both light tan, and it's both tan on the outside. But when you cut the turmeric root, it's this beautiful bright yellow. Anyway, so curcumin, the extract of turmeric, has been shown to reduce inflammation. It helps with inflammation of arthritis and rheumatoid arthritis. And even people with metabolic syndrome had a reduction. The cardiac C-reactive protein is a marker, or C-reactive protein anyway, is a marker for inflammation. And when people take curcumin, there are studies that show that their C-reactive protein goes down. And then there was another study where people with cancerous tumors, it doesn't say exactly which cancerous tumors they were given curcumin for 8 weeks, their inflammatory markers went down much more than the control group. So as we said, curcumin is poorly absorbed. When you get curcumin paired with black pepper, it will be paired with extract of black pepper, which is called piperine, and that can boost the absorption of curcumin. The other ways to improve curcumin absorption are the phytosome form, where it's attached to phosphatidylcholine. Your body's very interested in absorbing phosphatidylcholine because it uses it to strengthen it, to create cell membranes. So when your body sees, when a cell sees phosphatidylcholine, it'll grab onto it, and anything that's attached to it will get into the cell better. So phytosome is a great way to go. Another way to go, there's more technologies that help with absorption of curcumin. There's the water dispersible form, and there's a brand name of water dispersible. And then now the latest thing is the amorphous form, which is supposed to be even more absorbable than all of those. So right now I'm taking the phytosome form because that's what I have in the house, but I may go and, you know, after that, I'm probably going to get either the water dispersible or the amorphous form. Because it's nice and absorbable. You have to be careful how much curcumin, especially if you're taking highly absorbable curcumin, you have to be careful how much you take in a day, because it will push your biliary system. So if you have any stones, it could push those out. It could also give you it could simply give you diarrhea, but it pushes bile flow. And if it pushes it too fast, you can get in trouble. So you can either get diarrhea or you can get biliary stones. If the bottle says don't take any more than this dose, you should follow that. And for me, when I'm taking a highly absorbable, the phytosome, I can take more pills than if I take the water dispersible or the amorphous. So those two I limit to 2 pills a day, and the other ones I will take as much as 4 a day. Whatever product you get, look at what it says on the bottle and follow what it says, or get advice from a healthcare practitioner. Because it, like I said, if you take too much, it can be problematic. And the other thing you should realize is that if you are taking a drug, so this is something for me to think about, and that's another reason I don't want to overdo it. If you're taking a drug, it does stimulate your biliary flow, so you have to be careful how much you take, because it can effectively reduce the dose of the drug that you're taking, because it makes your liver work better. For this reason, right now, I'm not taking milk thistle because I want my antibiotic to stay on board. So I was taking milk thistle before that, but I am still taking the curcumin because I really want the anti-inflammatory benefits. So then there's fish oil. Fish oil, our favorite fish oil, has omega-3 fatty acids. They're very good for your health. They have EPA, eicosapentaenoic acid, and DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid. And your body uses those, and DHA has been found to have lots of anti-inflammatory effects. It reduces your cytokine levels, which cytokines are inflammatory compounds in your body, and it tends to decrease the inflammation and muscle damage from exercise. DHA has also been shown to generally reduce inflammatory markers. You have to be careful that if you don't take too much. If you take too much for you, you have to figure out a dose that works for you. I mean, I'll generally give you instructions, but some things that can happen is you can get fish burps. And if you're getting fish burps, a couple things could be true. One is that the fish oil you're taking is poor quality or it's rancid. So make sure you're getting very good quality fish oil. And when you get your fish oil, keep it in the fridge. And so that will make it so that it breaks down more slowly. And because rancid fish oil that's not in good shape will make you, you'll get fish burps worse from that. And the other thing is that some people, no matter what they do, they get fish burps. So if that happens to you, you can get enterically coated fish oil. Enterically coated fish oil is fish oil that has a coating on it. Like, you know, when you take coated aspirin, it has a coating on it so that it doesn't break down. It's acid resistant. So when you swallow it, it doesn't break down in your stomach, and it waits to break down until it gets into your small intestine. And so if you get that, you're going to be less likely to get the fish oil burps.
I get those.
You get fish burps, like no matter what you do. Did we give you enteric fish oil?
And I think so.
And it didn't work either. No. Yeah. So if that's you, if no matter what you do, fish oil makes you burp fishy, there are other essential fatty acids you can take. And so essential fatty, so that's a situation where I might suggest krill oil. Sometimes people won't burp up the krill oil. Krill oil, you don't take as high a dose because supposedly it's so stable because of the astaxanthin, the antioxidant that's in it, that you don't have to take as much. Hmm. And that's one suggestion. Another suggestion is if you absolutely can't do animal essential fatty acids, then we might suggest other things. And I like black cumin seed oil. Black cumin seed oil has thymoquinone in it, which is a great antimicrobial. I'm taking that right now. And it does have anti-inflammatory benefits. Olive oil, certainly, you know, extra virgin olive oil definitely has anti-inflammatory benefits. You can take that. And there's also borage oil and even primrose oil. And also blackcurrant seed oil, which all have gamma linolenic acid in them, which is a wonderful anti-inflammatory too. Flax oil, I will recommend sometimes. Some people do really well with flax oil. Flax oil it breaks down very easily, so you really have to keep it in the fridge and make sure it doesn't taste rancid or smell rancid. But the thing with flax oil is you need to have a well-working delta 60 saturase system in your body. So that you break down the alpha-linolenic acid in it into EPA and DHA, your active essential fatty acids. And the yield of it is not as high as if you take fish oil. So, but if people absolutely can't take fish oil and I want them to take an essential fatty acid, those are some of the directions that I go. So, all right. And then there's our friend, the ginger. And ginger, we like to put ginger in our food. And you can take ginger in pills, you can take ginger candy, you can drink ginger tea, you can drink ginger beer, you can drink natural ginger ale. Ginger is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's helpful for indigestion, nausea, even morning sickness in pregnancy. It's safe during pregnancy. The gingerol and gingerone in ginger help to reduce inflammation, and even inflammation in type 2 diabetes. Ginger can also help reduce your hemoglobin A1C. So if that's something you're looking at, if you're a type 2 diabetic or any kind of diabetic, and you have or if you're pre-diabetic and you have an elevated hemoglobin A1C, ginger can help to lower that. There was even a study where people were given 1,600 milligrams of ginger for 12 weeks. It improved their blood sugar control and inflammatory levels. They even studied ginger with breast cancer and found that it helped to decrease cardiac C-reactive protein and interleukin-6, another inflammatory compound, when compared with placebo. So you can take up to about 2 grams a day, but you have to be careful because it is blood thinning. So if you're taking a blood thinner, you have to be careful and not take very much or not eat very much. So if you're on blood thinning medication, make sure you have a practitioner on board who can guide you through this. All right, and then there's resveratrol, something that I am taking. It's in grapes and blueberries and other purple-skinned fruits. It's in chocolate, peanuts, and red wine. And it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's great for people with chronic conditions like liver disease, obesity, ulcerative colitis, and other chronic conditions. They even studied it in inflammatory bowel disease and gave it to people with IBD for 6 weeks. And people had improvements in their symptoms and inflammation. There are other studies where resveratrol supplements improve triglycerides, inflammatory markers. That's one of the things that I will give to people when they're having trouble with inflammatory markers in their cholesterol. So if they have an elevated oxidized LDL or they have elevated small dense LDL, resveratrol is one of the things that I'll give them. And they tend not to have side effects except that it does increase blood thinning. So if you're on a blood thinner, you really have to talk to your doctor about taking it. Then there's spirulina. It's a blue-green algae. It's a wonderful antioxidant. If you look at the color of it, it makes sense that it's going to be that kind of an antioxidant. And you can take a lot of it. You can put it in shakes. It comes in powdered form. But it does increase your immune function, so you have to be careful. It's one of those things, because it increases your immune functioning, you have to be careful of it if you have an autoimmune condition. Then there's good old vitamin D. So vitamin D, when I went to the conference, the CNPA conference in April, Todd Bourne he spoke about a study where we really find that the optimal level of vitamin D in somebody's blood is between 35 to 45 nanograms per milliliter, and your body is going to control how much, like if you take vitamin D, the only way to get it higher than that is to take it. And so when you, if you just get vitamin D from the sun, your body keeps the amount of vitamin D in your blood in check, and it can't make much more than that. So, and there's no reason to have it over 45 nanograms per milliliter. And if you have it too high, then you can get side effects. And so you can get liver issues, and at risk of getting kidney stones. So it's a good idea to keep get your vitamin D level checked and make sure that it stays between 35 to 45 nanograms per milliliter. And vitamin D can build up over time. Then there's bromelain, and bromelain is a pineapple enzyme. It makes pineapple taste astringent. Bromelain is mostly found in the stem of pineapple, but there is some bromelain in pineapple fruit. It is a wonderful anti-inflammatory, and how it works is a proteolytic enzyme. So if you have proteins, if you have inflammatory proteins in your blood and in your body and in your joints and stuff, bromelain can help to break those down. And bromelain can also, because it's a proteolytic enzyme, it can break down mucus, and there are proteins in mucus, and so it can help to break up mucus as well. So bromelain, when people have infections, you can give bromelain as well. Not everybody can take bromelain. I can't take bromelain. It gives me an upset stomach, which is unfortunate. I can eat pineapple, though. There is bromelain in the pineapple fruit, but not as much as in the stem. So if you really want to have bromelain have a proteolytic and anti-inflammatory effect in your body, you kind of need to take it as a supplement. But there, I have had people tell me that when they eat pineapple fruit, they do notice anti-inflammatory benefits. Then there's good old green tea. So green tea it's a wonderful antioxidant. Again, brightly colored fruits and vegetables tend to have a lot of antioxidants in it. And that's definitely true of green tea. Not only does green tea have chlorophyll in it, like anything green does, but it has the EGCG in it, the epigallocatechin 3-gallate. Which is that its most powerful polyphenol. It's a wonderful antioxidant. It reduces inflammation. They did a study in overweight men for 8 weeks, and they had them exercise as well, and found that they had good anti-inflammatory benefits compared with just exercising alone or just placebo. So the EGCG is a wonderful antioxidant, and green tea is when I want basic help for people with cancer. Now, of course, it won't necessarily cure your cancer, but it can be helpful and preventative, and it can be a good adjunct to whatever else you're doing. But green tea, because of its antioxidant properties, what antioxidants do, they not only reduce oxidative stress. So oxidative stress is where you have a breakdown at the metabolic level, at the molecular level, of a compound, and inflammation will cause metabolic, it'll cause oxidative damage. And so one of the things that antioxidants do, of course, it prevents oxidative damage, but it also helps with healthy gene expression, because genes can also break down over time. And when you have normal, healthy gene expression, you're less likely to express genes as abnormal cells. And so that is helpful, because what cancer basically is you have a cell line that is expressing itself abnormally and then overgrowing, and the immune system doesn't get around it. So green tea can be helpful in keeping that at bay. So, all right, then there's garlic. It's a common food that's high in anti-inflammatory compounds, and the compound that's in garlic that's really helpful is called allicin. Yeah, but it's not spelled like that. It's spelled A-L-L-I-C-I-N, because the genus of garlic is allium. So okay. The compound in it is allicin. So if you give concentrated allicin...
Thanks, Elvis.
Yes, I know, right? So if you give concentrated allicin, it can help with a lot of things. Aged, and you like to give aged garlic, and there are inflammatory markers that they noted that went down, both TNF-alpha, which you'll see in cancer and other inflammatory conditions, and IL-6, interleukin-6, went down. You see interleukin-6 elevated in a lot of autoimmune conditions, including Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and other autoimmune conditions. There's a theory that long-term aged garlic can help reduce the risk of inflammatory inflammation-related chronic diseases. And you have to find different doses. There are some that are supposedly odorless, and I am one of those unlucky people. I can't do garlic because it gives me an upset.
I'm one of those unlucky people. I cook for you.
Yeah, and you get right, and you can't do the garlic.
And I can do the garlic, but
you have
I can't.
That black stuff.
I can't cook dark garlic. I don't know. What do you got? You're being a mom.
Yes, you had that last week. I don't know what that is.
Black stuff, probably grease.
Right. Yeah. All right. And then there's vitamin C. Vitamin C is a really important vitamin. Obviously, we talk about it all the time. It's important in immunity. It's a wonderful antioxidant. It reduces inflammation. It helps to optimize the immune system. Vitamin C is chemotactic. So that means when vitamin C is around, it will increase the functioning of white blood cells. And so it helps that way. And it's also an antioxidant. Vitamin C helps you to build collagen. So if you have inflammation from reduced from arthritis or joint damage, vitamin C can help to rebuild that. If you take too much vitamin C, you can get diarrhea. So, I mean, it doesn't really hurt you, but if you take too much, it can give you loose stool. So, and sometimes we will give vitamin C to help people who have constipation, and we tell them to take a bowel tolerance dose. And people's bowel, this says 2000 milligrams here, but the bowel tolerance dose can differ for different people. And so, so we will tell people to slowly increase their vitamin C by 250 to 500 milligrams every couple of days until they get some loose stool, then they back off to the last dose that they took where they didn't have loose stool. There's no point in taking it so that you have loose stool, because it's just coming out the other end. And you can do the same thing with magnesium. You can take it to bowel tolerance. If you take it so that you're having a normal, healthy BM every day, then that's the dose that works for you. You take the highest dose where you can have a normal, healthy BM. And the thing is, if you're eating fruits and vegetables regularly, the dose of vitamin C you'll need to take is not going to be as high as somebody who, you know, tends not to do that. And so you're going to be more likely to hit your bowel tolerance if you say you're just like, you know, celebrating the season right now where there's so many vegetables and fruit and tomatoes and greens and green beans and corn and
how about that soup last night?
Soup last night was terrific. It was a terrific soup. So chronic inflammation may increase your risk of chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes. There's a lot of supplements that you can take, and make sure you get them from a reputable company. So Ron made a terrific soup. I asked him to make soup because I'm dealing with possible Lyme disease. So I wanted to have something that was easy on my digestion and something that was going to be really healthy. And I said, and something that had a bone, had bone broth as a base. So Ron, why don't you tell us about the soup that you made?
Sure. I can tell you about the soup. So it's really simple because, you know, we have all these vegetables right now. I guess I can't really, I'm right over here. Anyway, we have all these vegetables right now that we are privy to, which in overabundance. And the most, the infamous vegetable of all vegetables is, of course, the zucchini squash. Mm-hmm. Everyone has zucchini squash right now. It's just, it grows like a weed, I swear, this time of year.
Because so many people have zucchini. Zucchini looks like it's, so your zucchini's this big. Oh, this zucchini looks just about ready. I'll wait till tomorrow to pick it.
And then, oops! So, yeah, right. And that's exactly what happens. They get really big. But the other thing that is just bustling right now is tomatoes.
Tomatoes.
Lots
and
lots of tomatoes. So I was going to make a gazpacho soup, which I'm still going to do because I have a lot of tomatoes to do that with. But I decided to make a zucchini tomato soup last night. And then I realized that I also had some fresh ears of corn. So I just cut the corn off the cob and put that in there too. And then I went outside and pulled some leaves off our basil plants. And I chopped that up and threw it in there too. And took some bone broth, which I had in the freezer, and made it all into soup. And, you know, you add in some spices, some oregano and some parsley and, you know, all the other fun stuff, Italian seasonings, and put that all in there and give it a stir and let it boil down, and it's great.
Oh, it was really good. Great. It felt really, very really healthy soup. Going down. It was very easy on the digestion and high fiber, and it was warm, which you would think you shouldn't eat something warm in hot weather, but it's actually good. In Chinese medicine, they say you're not supposed to eat cold food because it taxes the triple warmer. And
the what?
It makes, yeah, triple warmer.
What is a triple warmer?
So in
Sounds
your
like a
abdomen,
car part.
It does, but it's a coalescence of qi in your abdomen. And it's a place where a lot of meridians come together. And
okay.
So in traditional Chinese medicine, you have meridians that run along the body on both sides, unless you have a midline meridian, like the governing vessel or the conception vessel. And they run throughout your body, and they have energy flows that go through the meridians. And there can be Shen, Qi, blood, and Jing. All of those things flow along the meridians. And Shen is the most rarefied energy, and it's centered in the heart. And when you have disturbed Shen, you can have psychiatric issues and you can have heart issues. Qi is what we think of all the time. And when you have good flow of Qi, when you're getting acupuncture, you're trying to balance those vital fluids, those vital forces. And Jing, there's prenatal Jing and postnatal Jing, and that's sort of like your physical energy. Qi is both physical and spiritual energy. It's energy that goes along those meridians. And then blood is probably the densest of the substances, and you can get stagnation of any of those. And so when you do acupuncture or acupressure, however you're doing it, or you take Chinese herbs, what you're doing is you're trying to increase the flow along the meridians. That's a basic 101 of Chinese medicine.
Okay.
You know, so I mean, I've talked about this before, but I mean, it bears repeating because, you know. So let's talk about the ingredients in your soup. So first of all, there was bone broth in the soup.
Yep.
So bone broth is a really great idea. So one of the things about Lyme disease is that Lyme disease, the spirochetes like to eat collagen. And so I had a chat with Mariah Hinchy, who we'll have on at some point. Mariah Hinchy is a naturopath, specializes in Lyme disease, and she practices over in Hebron. So I had a chat with her about taking collagen when you have Lyme disease. She says she thinks it's fine, that if you're taking a lot of collagen, better for the spirochetes to go after the collagen that you're eating than to go after your body parts. So I thought that was a very interesting perspective.
That's an interesting idea.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so some of the spirochetes are going to go after that collagen that you're eating, but whatever they don't go after will help to rebuild your joints. So you take bone broth to rebuild collagen, and because you're taking it in your digestive system will, it's going through your throat and your esophagus and your entire digestive system. So you're going to get some benefit from the collagen washing over those structures. So it's going to help to protect and rebuild your digestive system. And then if you do absorb some of that collagen, then it's going to go into build up the collagenous structures in your body, your muscles and tendons and joints. So it's really helpful there. And when you have Lyme disease, you can have digestive upset. The spirochete doesn't discriminate. It goes everywhere. And so then there's zucchini. And zucchini is going to have some level of antioxidants and fiber in it. It's not a superpower in terms of nutrition, but it is very helpful. It's great as a base for other things, and you know, because it takes on the flavor of other things. You can put it into a soup, and it is really high in fiber, so that's really good. And then tomatoes. So tomatoes, especially when you cook them, they're high in an antioxidant called lycopene, and lycopene is it's a carotenoid related to beta carotene and all the other carotenoids. And it is also something that can help to protect against cancer. Particularly, we think of it for prostate cancer, but it can be helpful against lots of different cancers, and it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. And you will get some lycopene if you eat the fresh tomatoes that are growing right now. But if you cook them, when you cook vegetables, it enhances the absorbability of the carotenoids. So it's really good to do. So having fresh tomatoes cooked in the soup was actually a really good thing. And then corn. So some people are not thrilled about corn because corn can, if it's not organic, it can be GMO. But this time of year, it's very fresh. And if you can get it organic or unsprayed and hopefully non-GMO, and you're not allergic to corn, it does have lutein in it, and lutein is a really wonderful antioxidant, both for your cardiovascular system and for your eyes. It's very good for eye protection. And then you put spices. Herbs and spices have great antioxidant capacity in them. So if you're doing oregano and basil, and what else did you put in?
Parsley. Oregano, basil, salt, pepper.
Yep.
Trying to think if I put any. I don't think I put any hot pepper in there. I wasn't
super spicy, but nope. It was fine.
No, it was very mild. Nice. I wanted to keep it mild because otherwise I would have put some red pepper flakes in, and that would have popped it up a little bit.
Right. But
you can always add those later.
Yeah, that's true. You can add them to taste when you're eating it. So that was a wonderful, healthy anti-inflammatory soup. It was really good. Okay, so great job doing that soup. All right, so let's look at some anti-inflammatory herbs. And here's a whole bunch of anti-inflammatory herbs. Ashwagandha is an anti-inflammatory herb. It can help to lower cortisol in the body and help you with stress. And it also reduces inflammation, and it can help balance blood sugar levels. We think of ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is one of the herbs that's thought of as Indian ginseng. And people like to take it to help with sleep and to help with anxiety. And it's also it's also a general anti-inflammatory. So it helps with a lot of different things. It gives you a lot of bang for your buck. Then there's astragalus. Astragalus, there's an understanding that one of the things that you can take to help prevent Lyme disease during Lyme season is astragalus. It is a legume. So it's used in traditional Chinese medicine. And it's been used for thousands of years. It has flavonoids in it, which are antioxidants. It also the saponins and polysaccharides help it to be anti-inflammatory. Then there's calendula. I love calendula. It's a great anti-inflammatory. People think of calendula as something that you put in cream, and calendula does help to stimulate healing and normal cellular growth. But you can take it internally too, and it's great because it helps with the healing of skin. It helps with the healing of epithelial tissues, and epithelial tissues are the linings and coverings of your skin and your digestive system and your respiratory system. So if you take it internally, it's going to help heal your digestive system. Calendula has linoleic acid, which is similar to flax. And so it can help to reduce dermatitis, ulcers, diaper rash, sore throats, eczema, psoriasis, any rash that you have. You can even dab calendula on
cuts and bruises and lacerations. It opens. You can put calendula, as long as it's clean, you can put it on road rash even, you know, and any kind of scrapes or lacerations. And you can also put it on burns. So calendula cream is wonderful for stimulating healing. You can use calendula succus, which is the expressed fresh juice with a little bit of alcohol, and that can cleanse that can cleanse wounds as well. And you can also take it internally as tea or in tinctures to help to heal your digestive system. Then there's cat's claw. It's from the Amazon. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's used for Crohn's disease. People use it for colds and flu because it's a great anti-inflammatory and an immune tonic. And cat's claw is classically used for Lyme disease as well. That's one of the things that's thought to help to clear up Lyme disease. And it's one of the things that we give to help to get rid of those spirochetes. It's frequently used in tinctures for Lyme, and it's used in a straight form. Cat's claw, when you use it, it should be high in POA and low in TOA, so you get TOA free cat's claw, and it's going to work better for you. Then there's chamomile, and that's a wonderful plant that's very healing and nourishing, and it's anti-inflammatory. It has apigenin in it, which is a great anti-inflammatory. It can help with arthritis. It can help with ulcerative colitis. It can help with other GI disorders. If you just have an upset stomach, you can drink chamomile tea. It's also very calming, and so it can help you it can help you just with anxiety. Or if you're just feeling a little stressed out, you can take chamomile tea. It can help calm you down. And if you're having trouble with sleep, you can drink chamomile tea before bed. It's just a classic tea that you can take when you're just any kind of sick. And chamomile tea is, chamomile, it has slight pineapple notes because there are aromatics in it that kind of smell like pineapple. And it's mostly flowery tasting. So if you're expecting a cup of tea that tastes like tea, it won't taste like that. It's not going to taste like your Camellia sinensis, your black tea or your green tea or white tea. And there's no caffeine in it. It is a little flowery and a little pineapple-y. It's very pleasant. You can drink it as is, or you can throw some honey into it. But it can be a very nice thing. It's very soothing and calming. Then there's cilantro. It's full of antioxidants. It has a lot of quercetin in it, so that can be helpful. It can help you with different toxins. It can help with the cilantro is thought to help with detoxifying mercury if you have extra mercury. That's sort of controversial, but people take coriander. So by the way, cilantro and coriander are the same thing. Mm-hmm. You refer to it as cilantro when you're talking about the leaves, and you refer to it as coriander when you're talking about the seeds, but it's the same plant. And so it has a lovely flavor. I really like it. And not everybody likes cilantro. It's often used in Asian cooking, especially South Asian cooking. So you'll find it in Vietnamese cooking, Thai cooking. You don't find it as much in, like Chinese or Japanese cooking, but, you'll find it in more tropical areas. And then it's also used in Mexican cooking and South American cooking where they use spicy stuff. They'll use cilantro as well. I really like it. And it's a great antioxidant. It has antioxidants in it that can help with many illnesses and possibly even cancer. Then there's good old echinacea. Echinacea has flavonoids, has inulin, has immune polysaccharides, and it's often used for infections. It does boost the immune system. You have to be a little careful with it when you have an autoimmune condition. And that that's a little controversial, that they do say it can help to reduce the inflammation of rheumatoid arthritis, but I understand because it's so immune stimulating, you have to be careful if you have an autoimmune condition. Like, they don't recommend using it when you have lupus. And yet I am seeing here that they use it for rheumatoid arthritis. It is a great go-to for colds and flu. That echinacea is one of the things you'll use in combination with other things if you have colds and flu, because it does stimulate the activity of your white blood cells. Then there's fenugreek. It's a great anti-inflammatory. It's great for digestive health and cardiovascular health. It helps with stomach inflammation. It helps different inflammatory issues like mouth ulcers, bronchitis. And you can find fenugreek supplements in tincture, capsule. And fenugreek is something that's also used to regulate blood sugar. Then there's holy basil. Holy basil
is... Holy basil.
Holy basil, Batman. So holy basil is also known as Tulsi. It's not the same thing as culinary basil, but you can use it culinarily. I take holy basil pretty much every night in tea, and it's very lovely and calming. And it's also antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal. It can help with headaches, sinus pressure. It can help your teeth, and helps your heart health. So I'm doing a lot of good things for myself because I have a cup every day. And, you know, they, like I said, it's another one of the herbs that's thought of as Indian ginseng. And when we talk about ginseng, we're talking about what's known as an adaptogen, something that can help with a lot of different things. And it is calming. And it's, so I have a whole calming routine at night. And one of the things I take for that is holy basil. I do that. And I also do my, my yoga nidra meditation and my, yin yoga. So, and I take holy basil and I take a bunch of supplements at night and I use the holy basil tea to help get those supplements down. And I put collagen in the holy basil and it's great because I can't taste the collagen in the holy basil tea. It works very well. And then there's kava, or also known as kava kava, and Piper methysticum. And it's wonderful and calming. And when you get kava, you have to make sure that it's used from the true root, not the rootlets and not the above ground parts of the kava. Because there are people who took kava and they got liver damage from it. And when you're, that's from taking the wrong part of the kava plant. So you have to get, make sure you're getting a reputable source of kava from a reputable company. And then you'll get the root. It is anti-inflammatory. It's great for immune system function. And it is calming. It's another one of those things you can take to help with sleep and anxiety. And it reduces inflammation. And it has been used in rheumatoid arthritis as well. Then there's lovely lemon balm. Lemon balm. I love lemon balm because it's so mild. Lemon balm, most people, if unless you really can't stand lemon, you're probably going to like the way it tastes. And it's not sort of an obnoxious lemon. It's very... It's in the mint family, and it's a great antioxidant and anti-inflammatory. It is also antiviral. It's one of the herbs that I think of for as an antiherpetic, that if you have herpes simplex, or if you have shingles, or if you have chicken pox, or if you just have a cold or the flu, lemon balm can be helpful. It's a great antiviral, but it is particularly antiherpetic along with comfrey. And so you can, so if you have herpes simplex lesions on your mouth or genitally, you can use salves that have lemon balm and comfrey in them, and it'll help to calm down the inflammation, might even help with the pain. So it is definitely helpful against inflammation, but I also think of it as a nervine, another one of those things you can take at night to help calm you down. It's definitely a nervine. I'll have people get lemon balm glycerite, which is very pleasant. It's in glycerin and it has a lovely lemony, sweet lemony flavor. It's very easy to take down and you can take, you pretty much take as much as you want. And it can be calming. It's really nice that way. Then there's licorice. Licorice you have to be careful of because licorice has a constituent in it called glycyrrhizin. And glycyrrhizin is stimulating. And if you tend towards low blood pressure and low blood sugar, or if you have POTS, if you have postural orthostatic tachycardia, licorice can help to mitigate that. Licorice, if you don't need the stimulating effects of licorice, you can get deglycyrrhizinated licorice, licorice that has no glycyrrhizin in it. Then you can take it for its gastrointestinal anti-inflammatory components. It's also good for coughs and colds, and of course it helps with heartburn. And generally when we're using it for heartburn, we use DGL, unless you're a person who tends to have low blood pressure and low blood sugar, in which case we might give you tincture or pills with the glycyrrhizin intact. It has flavonoids and coumarins and stilbenoids. So you have to be careful again with licorice because it does have, if it has coumarins in it, coumarins are similar to coumadin, which they're not the same thing, but coumarins are blood thinning compounds that are found in plants, and licorice definitely has that. So if you're on a blood thinner, you have to be careful about taking licorice. Then there's oregano. Oregano, again, it's another mint, and it's wonderful in soups. We had some in our soup last night, and it helps with respiratory issues. It's great for indigestion. You can use essential oils of oregano to help with chronic inflammation and arthritis. If you have digestive upset from that you have, it can even help to fight parasites, and it can help with poor quality bacteria and other microorganisms in your digestive system. Oregano oil has a constituent called carvacrol, and the carvacrol is also antiborrelial, so it can help. It's one of the things you can take when you have Lyme disease. All right, and then there's parsley. Parsley is not just a garnish. You can eat it. It's okay. We did it last night. And it has a lot of wonderful compounds in it. It has phenolics and flavonoids, has carotenoids, vitamin C, and it's just a great antioxidant, and it's known to reduce inflammation. So that's something you can be throwing in your food or sprinkling on your food at any time. Then there's passion flower. Passion flower is great. It's another herb that I think of as a nervine that calms your nerves, but it also has antioxidants and phytonutrients and reduces inflammation and decreases fluid buildup. So it's got a lot of stuff going on. Passion flower is something that we think of something that we think of for cardiovascular issues, that we'll give it to people with high blood pressure because it is calming. It helps to reduce inflammation and fluid, and because it's calming, it can help with lowering your blood pressure. And then there's rhodiola. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It can help to increase your energy. It's been shown to help with athletic performance and reduce cortisol. So if you're very stressed, it can help to calm your cortisol levels. And rhodiola is also something that we give to people. There's been studies on it to help with altitude sickness. So sometimes people come to me and say, I'm going to Colorado, or I'm going to climb Mount Everest. No, that hasn't happened. But I'm going somewhere I'm going to be at 8, 9, 10,000 feet. I'm worried about the altitude. Okay, let's give you rhodiola. Why don't you start taking it at least 2 weeks before you go, and then take it right on as long as you're there. The problem with altitude is you just have to acclimate to it. And that's really the only way to get. Like, if you're going to go to Colorado for 3 days, you're not going to acclimate. You're going to have a little bit of, you could get real light altitude sickness, or you could just, I know when I've spent time in Prescott, Arizona, I've had some issues with a little bit of lightheadedness, and my belly will be a little off, and it doesn't go away till I come home. But if I would stay there for 2 weeks, it would all go away. And the nice thing about being in altitude is you get more lung capacity. You get more your body builds more alveoli. Then there's rosemary. It's a wonderful anti-inflammatory as well. It has rosmarinic acid in it. Helps with memory and focus, and can be used topically for pain. And you can also take rosemary pills for pain. And rosemary is another thing you can put in your soup or use in your food. And it's a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It tastes really good. It's really good on potatoes. But rosemary, and it's really pretty much good on anything. Well, maybe not chocolate. I don't know. So, and then there's sage. So this is the salvia plant, and it's been used in medicine for centuries. You can burn sage, and it will, in addition to, you know, whatever you believe about clearing spirits or bad energy from a room, it does have essential oils that are antimicrobial. And so if you do, if you have a sage infusion, or if you do a sage diffusion, it will help to clear antimicrobial species from the air. But you can also eat it. You can take it as in pills and capsules and teas and essential oils. And you can use it in your food. You can use it as a seasoning. It's a wonderful, has a very bright, bit astringent taste, but it can be really nice on, say, your fish or your meat or something. It's a good savory spice. Then there's spearmint. And spearmint is a great anti-inflammatory. We always think of peppermint, but people forget about spearmint. And spearmint is so lovely. I mean, I like it in gum. I like it in candy. But it is a great anti-inflammatory. It helps with bacteria and fungal infections. and helps with digestive issues and boosting memory. We also give it to people who need to lower their testosterone. So if you have a woman who has polycystic ovarian syndrome, then spearmint and peppermint can help to lower testosterone, and we will give it sometimes. It's hard, it can be hard to find concentrated spearmint essential oil pills, but sometimes we find it, and well, that's one of the tools that we'll use. And then our 20th herb that is wonderful for reducing inflammation is St. John's wort. And St. John's wort is another nerving, and it is it's growing in our yard. Ron is pointing to the yard. It's growing in the yard. And it has a lot of substances that are, it's a wonderful antiviral and antiherpetic. Mm-hmm. And so you can use it for herpes simplex, upstairs or downstairs, and topically. And St. John's wort has hypericin in it, which is really good for healing skin. And the interesting thing about St. John's wort is when you crush the buds, when you crush the buds, it will come up with the hypericin, and you'll see a wonderful, you won't see, the flowers are yellow, but you'll see this beautiful ruby red stuff, and that's the hypericin, that's the active ingredient. So I should wrap it up, right?
Well, you got about 3 minutes or so left, yeah.
Yes, okay.
3 or 4 minutes, something like that. So, all right. Yeah, you're getting there.
So that was great. So we talked about all kinds of anti-inflammatory herbs, and we'll talk more about inflammatory conditions next week. And we might get around to talking about some stuff to help treat Lyme disease as well. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza, and special guest, he's the silent guest right now, Billy Dujak. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. And also my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.